Summer isn't just a season, it's a feeling. Zip lining through a rainforest in Maui. Mountain biking in Sedona. And of course, driving off in a new Lexus during the Golden Opportunity Sales Event. Get offers on select luxury SUVs now through September 2nd. Because the greatest measure of an automobile is how it makes you feel. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Just one bite of the deliciously comforting flavor of Easy Cookin' Eckrich Smoked Sausage is enough to take you all the way home. Its naturally hardwood smoked taste sends you away to those summer days with Dad at the grill. Take a bite and see for yourself. Eckrich.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Picks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. A podcast about Rob's movies with your hosts, Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let the show begin.
Thank you, AI guy. And feels good to be back in black and white, Josh. I was uncomfortable last week being in full color.
I prefer the color, but the black and white works.
It does. It's kind of our thing. And welcome, everybody, to Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks, a service of the Mike O'Mara Show.
Maybe, you know, if we move out of these, like, once we finish with, like, the 1930s, 40s movies,
yeah,
maybe we'll change the color of our logo, kind of brighten it up.
We don't have any sort of, no orderation. No. So, yeah, maybe. But for now, let's just go with black and white movies, black and white.
If we get into like an all 80s movies theme, then we can go with some neon or something.
And I'll have big hair. I will go ahead and get big hair and a swatch, and I can wear my Vans. It'll be a great 80s show. But before we move on to today's program, and I hope everyone watched the movie that we recommended last week. Remember last week we were talking about The Natural.
Yes.
And I got this wonderful letter. Oh, and here's never too shy.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
Any chance?
Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters.
And I hope you're singing along at home.
Let's find out what you got to say.
Mailman. So this is a letter about The Natural that I got, and I'll just take it from the top here because it's fascinating. Dear guys, I guess that's us.
Yes, we would be the guys.
Thank you. Hope all is well. I am a big fan of you and the show, and I live in Buffalo. My life hasn't been too great the past year, and I've been out of work since March, but you, Mike, Josh, have kept me sane while dealing with a lot of the crap in the past year. Well, that's about the nicest thing you can say. Thank you. A comment you made during The Natural last week literally made me spit out my drink. You were looking at a clip and you said, I could have been the Bat Boy.
Yes, my claim to by that.
Yeah, I do too, that I could have been the Bat Boy. Well, this guy says, my claim to fame is that I was supposed to be the Bat Boy.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on. He's supposed to be the Bat Boy in The Natural?
This is great. In the summer of my freshman year of high school, The Natural, which was filmed in Buffalo, we knew this, was casting for the Bat Boy. My mother sent a picture to the casting director, and I got called in to read for the part. I read for the casting director, and after a short wait, she said that director Barry Levinson would like to meet me. Wow. And so on the way to the office, I even passed Robert Redford, who greeted me with a great big hello. Spoke to Mr. Levinson for a while, and he really liked me. He even wanted me to go and meet Robert Redford properly. So it sounds like, he's got this.
Yeah, he's got it.
Sewed up. While I was waiting to meet Bob Redford, someone else on the crew interrupted Mr. Levinson and said that there was another kid here for the Bat Boy role, and he was told to come down after being spotted at a Polish market on the east side of Buffalo.
Oh, no.
Yes. Barry was pretty perturbed, but finally said the other kid could come in, so we both read for the part with the director. Well, I read for the part. The other kid could hardly read. We both left, and a couple of days later, I was heartbroken to find out the other kid got the part.
Oh, so all based on looks.
I guess, but the fact that he can't read, well, he wasn't much of a talker in the movie either. Right. But this is the great part, because I think we discussed last week how much we love the character of the Bat Boy.
Yeah, he's great.
Great character and well done. This letter continues. I later learned that the Bat Boy caused so much tension on the set that Redford almost took a swing at him.
Well, he had a head about the size of a basketball.
I never got another chance at acting, but telling this story makes me so happy many decades later. Life isn't always easy, but I appreciate the entertainment you provide. Sincerely, Dave Chick. I can't imagine the guy that played in the Bat Boy making Redford take a swing at him. Yeah. But, you know, if you're totally not into the whole motion picture system and you can't read, maybe it was tough.
Right, you don't know your lines.
It speaks well to the director, though, and that it comes off so well.
Yeah, and that listener's got the perfect, like, that game of two lies and a truth.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you got to try to guess which outrageous thing is true. That's the perfect story for that.
We're taping a little later today than I wanted to because I was down at the Polish market hoping to be discovered.
Looking for a little kid.
Yeah, no, I want to be the kid. I want to be in it. But that's not what we're doing today because today we take on a movie from 1933, Duck Soup. And I know Josh has never seen it. One of my favorites. It's a Paramount picture. It runs only 69 minutes, which you had to appreciate.
Yes. Okay. I wrote that down.
Good. It stars Groucho, Harpo, Chico, and Zeppo Marx with Margaret Dumont, Louis Calhoun, and Edgar Kennedy. Directed by a very notable director, Leo McCarey, who did Going My Way, The Awful Truth, and Affair to Remember. And was written by probably the Marx Brothers' best writers, Burt Kalmar, Harry Ruby, Nat Perrin, and Arthur Sheikman. Groucho stayed in touch with all of them throughout his entire life. He loved their work. Now, before we start, I have to address one thing. Chico Marx, his name should be pronounced Chico. That's how they did it. But
okay.
I, my entire life, have called him Chico, which I guess is what? The Spanish pronunciation.
I have no problem with that.
Okay, so know this, folks. It's just me being me when I call him that. I'm not ignorant of what you should call him, but that's how we're going to go.
And I'll tell you, I invited Kelly to watch this movie with me.
And
she said, I don't think we can watch those movies anymore. And I said, why?
Why?
And she said, well, isn't that who created Marxism?
Oh, no.
And I said,
you've got
the wrong Marx.
Yeah, that's bad.
That's nothing to do with that.
No, that's not right.
And then she still said no because it was a Rob movie.
And it was black and white. But yes. just a quick plot summation. Really not as much going on here as in The Natural, so this won't take as long. A fictional country named Fredonia is in financial crisis. They've borrowed a lot of money from a rich dowager named Mrs. Teasdale. She says she'll only lend them more money if they appoint Rufus T. Firefly as the leader of Fredonia. Rufus Firefly is played by Groucho Marx. It's never explained why she loves him as a leader or what
how
his
she
past
knows him
is.
Or anything.
Exactly. And it doesn't seem like they know each other that well because once he meets her, he starts hitting on her. So there's a welcome reception there's a welcome reception for Rufus T. Firefly, and that's where we meet Ambassador Tarantino from the neighboring country of Sylvania. And he is set on marrying Mrs. Teasdale, so he enlists a famous Fredonian dancer, Vera Markell, to seduce Firefly, clearing the way for him to woo Mrs. Teasdale. Then we also meet Firefly's secretary, Bob Roland, played by Zeppo Marx. And he says Firefly is never late, and they do a whole production number about the fact that he's never late. And then he's late. This is him arriving at his own reception. And it's some of Groucho's greatest, greatest work.
As chairwoman of the reception committee, I extend the good wishes of every man, woman, and child of Fredonia.
Never mind that stuff. Take a card.
Card? What'll I do with the card?
You can keep it. I've got 51 left. Now, what were you saying?
As chairwoman of the reception committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
I've sponsored your appointment because I feel you are the most able statesman in all Fredonia.
Well, that covers a lot of ground. Say, you cover a lot of ground yourself. You better beat it. I hear they're going to tear you down and put up an office building where you're standing. You can leave in a taxi. If you can't get a taxi, you can leave in a huff. If that's too soon, you can leave in a minute and a huff. You know you haven't stopped talking since I came here? You must have been vaccinated with a phonograph needle.
Now, in the old days, a phonograph needle was something that, you know, you used to play a record, yes. Just so you know. Okay.
Does he have his lines written down on the floor?
I don't think so.
In that shot, he multiple times looks down at the floor.
Really? I never noticed
cues.
That.
Yeah,
now, that could be. Okay, that could very well be.
Watch how much he looks down.
There's a lot of words there, you have to admit. So let's see. Go ahead.
Oh, Your Excellency. We've been expecting you. As chairwoman of the reception committee, I extend the good wishes of every man, woman, and child of Fredonia.
Never mind that stuff. Take a card.
Card?
Still funny.
What do you with the card?
You can keep it. I've got 51 left. Now, what were you saying?
As chairwoman of the reception committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
I've sponsored your appointment because I feel you are the most able statesman in all Fredonia.
Well, that covers a lot of ground.
So there's
say
one
you
down.
A lot of
yeah,
ground
another
right.
time looking
you
at the ground.
I hear they're going to tear you down and put up an office building where you're standing.
Another
you
time
can leave
looking
in a taxi.
Down.
If you can't it's get a taxi, you can leave in a huff. If that's too soon, you can leave in a minute and a huff. You know you haven't stopped talking since I came here? You must have been vaccinated with a phonograph needle.
You know what? That
it's
is
at the
quite
end of
possible.
Every line.
Yeah, but I don't think it plays badly because his delivery is so fast. And I think he's just trying to keep the order. If he
it's
reading.
It's not bad. I was just trying to figure out why he kept looking down.
Yeah.
And then when it was faster paced, he kept his head down while saying it. So
yeah, it's. I think he probably, if it was written down, it was just to get the insults in the right order.
Yeah.
Because obviously he knew them the way they came trippingly off his tongue. We go to this whole meeting. We learn the laws of his administration. He's not a great leader. But apparently that's what the old dowager wants to run Fredonia. And so meanwhile, we find out in Sylvania, Tarantino has tried a revolution, but it's failed. So he hires two spies to watch after and get some dirt on Rufus T. Firefly.
We follow you good, eh?
Gentlemen! Gentlemen, what is this?
Shh. This is spy stuff.
Telegram for you, sir.
No.
He gets mad because he can't read.
Oh, I see.
So they're working for the opposing country at this yes. point.
And Pinky is my favorite character.
He's great, isn't he?
In the movie.
It's so much fun.
The one that does not speak.
Yeah. Is that why he's your favorite? Because he's not speaking?
No, I think he does a good job with the with playing to the camera and the pantomime. And it adds comedy without just a lot of words.
Yeah,
well, no
I want to ask you about the characterizations of the brothers later. But so Ciccolini, who is in that, goes undercover. We had just seen Firefly in a meeting with the Chamber of Deputies, and it's ridiculous. He's playing Jax. He's insulting everyone. All the deputies quit. And he hires Ciccolini, who is spying on him by running a peanut cart, as the Secretary of War. And then Pinky comes in, and inexplicably, a dog comes out of his chest and barks, which I think is one of the most unexpected gags in the movie. And it doesn't really make any sense for any reason other than the fact that it's a surprise.
Well, that's a lot of this movie.
I suppose. They find out that Tarantino is trying to undermine the entire country. So the idea is that Firefly will get him to insult him. And then, you know, he will insult the ambassador, and then the ambassador will slap Firefly and he can kick him out of the country. But of course, it goes the other way and Firefly slaps the ambassador and they're headed right off to war. Now, we introduce a character that is really sort of tangential to the whole plot, but I love it. Is Pinky has taken over the peanut vending wagon and they're adjacent to a guy selling lemonade. Now, the lemonade salesman is a guy who's in a million funny movies. His name is Edgar Kennedy. And what he did was he was master of what was called the slow burn. And to that is a slow buildup of just totally losing your mind in anger. That was kind of like his trademark. And he's really good in this movie, especially when Harpo ends up dipping his feet in the lemonade for the ultimate revenge. There's also a great routine with the hats, but they're just head to head and bumping heads the whole time, which has nothing to do with the plot. Miss Teasdale tries to broker a deal for peace. Firefly refuses again. So she says, I'm going to keep the plans of war at my house until we go to war. Now, also in the house, at this point, all three Marx brothers are in the house, and they all end up dressed as Groucho. And this confusion results in them doing the world famous mirror scene where they look just alike. Because, you know, in real life, they are brothers. So once they put on the makeup and the glasses and the hat, it is almost indistinguishable. We'll discuss the mirror scene. Chicolina gets caught, gets put on trial. They do a huge 1930s style musical number that doesn't have a trace of seriousness to it. It's called To War, and it's a massive music routine. They go to war. Firefly continues to command and change uniforms all through the war. It looks bad, so they escape to Mrs. Teasdale's home, and luckily they're able to capture Tarantino. The war ends. Hail, hail, Fredonia. So that, I mean, it's not a lot of plot to sustain a 70-minute movie.
Right.
But I want to know your first take of the movie.
Well, we'll get to the plot when we talk about some of the problems and issues I have with the movie.
Was there anything you liked about the movie?
There was.
Okay, great.
69 minutes.
Okay, the short you liked.
Yeah. I like that. I like a short movie. I liked, as I mentioned, I liked Pinky.
Yeah.
Which means my favorite scene in the whole movie was the lemonade stand fight.
Isn't that great?
A lot of Pinky, and it's great.
Yeah. I love the interplay with them and Edgar Kennedy because it's a 2-on-1 and he's bigger than them and he's a mean guy and they just keep up with him. The scene with the hats that where it ends up with his hat literally being on fire makes me laugh every time.
Oh, and the horn and filling it up with lemonade and then squirting the guy.
Yes, exactly. I love it.
It's great.
It's so great.
The other thing I liked about this movie is the way it uses silence. There are moments on this where I thought, wait, did my speakers go out? Did something's not working? Because your movies today have zero silence.
You're right.
We are. Mm-hmm. We're even taught with the podcast and radio, like you can't have silence. Silence is bad. Something's got to make noise.
Fill it up.
And this movie let things play with your eyes only, which I thought was good.
Did you feel, and I really watched it because I have the Blu-ray, of course, but as I really, really watched it on the big screen with the Blu-ray, the backgrounds and the way the movie looks, it's not an excessively big budget picture, but it looks like a big budget picture. There's lots of extras. Yes. The sets are pretty ornate and there's a lot of stuff to look around. It's a beautiful film that way.
But it looks like a stage set where it's like, here's a scene and the cameras are just focused here. I was thrown off a little bit by the, Paramount?
Yeah.
Who released it? Because the Paramount, they put a color, beautiful Paramount logo at the very beginning of the movie.
And
I was like, this is going to be color? I was surprised. No. And then it rolled into this old black and white. So it teased me a little bit there. I also, my big takeaway from this movie is watching this movie is understanding why people like you and older people and comedians love this movie because this is basically the foundation for what became the Naked Gun, Hot Shots, these satire shows, where it got the feel of instead of build up to one big joke, we're going to throw 100 jokes at you a minute and some of them will land, some will not.
Have you ever seen a movie that was so dense with comedy? Again, you said is that it doesn't all land, but you don't go 10 seconds without something.
Right. There's
going
constantly
on.
Something. And even in that silence, there's something comedic going on visually.
Yeah. It's really kind of remarkable the speed of it and the anarchy of it that it goes on. And the anarchy is sort of offset. Obviously, is an anti-government piece, although they claim it wasn't. Mussolini had the movie banned in Italy because he thought it was a direct insult to him and his government. It wasn't, but when the Marx Brothers found that out, they were delighted. It is very pointed about government. There was even a subplot that was taken out where Groucho or Rufus T. Firefly was a munitions dealer and was going to make money profiteering off the war. I guess that's a little too close to real life to be funny. But, you know,
that's the foundation. The whole foundation of the whole movie is that money buys politics. And that with money, you can get whatever you want in politics, which is, that's classic. That was good then, works now as well.
And you can see that, you know, when the ambassador is after Mrs. Teasdale, he wants to gain power of the country. The only reason Groucho is sticking around for Mrs. Teasdale is he wants her money. He wants that money. and it's very important to him to get it. You're right. There is a strong financial motivation behind the whole movie. Did you find the satire? I'm curious. I know you have more to say, but did you find the satire really does sort of stand up because of the anti-government notion and the inherent brokenness of politics?
It didn't feel anti-government to me. It felt just, this is all silly.
Okay.
And to me, and government is silly. And now as we're recording this and we've got the whole government shutdown thing, it speaks more to silliness of like every politician trying to take a stand. You think back to that scene where the guy was like, I've got new business. And then suddenly it's old business.
Yeah.
And it's like just that type of thing where it's like just control and silliness.
But that is, I do feel that is a comment to, you know, government regulations and red tape.
Yes.
You know, they can't even get through a meeting without you have to take up the tax before you take up the carpet.
Right.
They bring up things that don't even make sense, but they're all on the, you know, they're all part of his day. It is a significantly silly movie, and it was not a big hit at the time. It didn't lose money, but it wasn't a massive hit as many of the Marx Brothers movies were.
Yeah. Now, as we're talking about good things, we talked about the lemonade scene and how much fun that was.
Right.
And I love the idea of a peanut vendor as your way to interact with the ruler.
Yeah.
Because I could totally see that working nowadays. I could see a McDonald's truck pulling up and tossing Big Macs over the fence to Donald.
I you know what? It was reminiscent to me. What was the show with Kevin Spacey where he was president? House of Cards.
House of Cards.
And even when things were, you know, he was being president, he would still go to his barbecue guy.
Yes.
And talk to him. And yeah, it's nice to have the ultimate supreme ruler in a land have someone like that to sort of, you know, like, talk to.
This is my connection to the common folk.
And yeah, and he becomes Secretary of War.
Right. Which I guess we have now again.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other scene that we haven't talked about yet that we have to talk about in this good section is the mirror scene. Because that has been copied in almost every comedy. That's used over and over and over again.
It's amazing. It was actually thought of by Leo McCarey, the director. They did not create it. And what's funny is that you mentioned how they use silence in the movie, which is great. Because it also, when they use silence, it makes the rapid-fire dialogue sort of pop a little more because it gives your ears a rest.
Yeah.
But this was, the mirror routine was taken from a silent movie. I think it was Harold Lloyd. Don't get mad if I'm wrong. But they decided, the director said, let's do the mirror routine in here. And they shot that in only 2 hours. I mean, they just went in and did it. And the precision of them pretending to do each other, and spoiler alert, there's a couple gags in it that are so totally unexpected. When he spins, but the mirror reflection doesn't spin.
Right.
And it still holds up. The switching of the hats in that is so funny. And it is a great device to get all three Marx Brothers in one scene and the capture of Ciccolini. Now, Harpo even redid the mirror scene with Lucy in an episode of I Love Lucy some years later. When you watched it, what was your take on it? Because when I watch it, it's amazing to me because it is so precise.
Yeah, for me, it was precise. It's fun. It's also, for me, I'm looking at it with different lenses where this is new to me, but I've seen so many things that copy it. So I think straight to Scooby-Doo because they do that type of routine in Scooby-Doo all the time. And I see, oh, well, the inspiration was from these Marx Brothers.
Yeah. Now, I have to ask, well, do you have any other moments that you want to cite that you really enjoy?
No, those were the lemonade and the mirror scenes are the best scenes in the movie.
Okay. I would agree with the mirror scene. I kind of like the scene with the board. Where he's, you know, the Secretary of War is out of order, which reminds me, so is the plumbing. In 1990, it was added, this movie, to the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress. It was ranked number 5 by the AFI in 2000 as the 100 funniest movies in America. So the 5th funniest movie in America, according to the AFI. And in 2007, the American Film Institute again ranked this as the number 60th greatest movie of all time. So that being said, and before we get to the stuff we don't like about it or stuff you don't like about it, I do have a question for you as sort of like groundwork. Going into this, leaving out the Marxism comment from your wife, what did you know about the Marx Brothers, if anything?
Nothing. Black and white movies, not much.
Okay. So you never caught it as a rerun?
Never saw anything. This is the first time seeing anything with the Marx Brothers. I knew who they were.
Right.
I know, you know, Groucho for the mustache.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Did you ever watch his quiz show, You Bet Your Life, later on when he was... Okay.
No.
So this was really sort this of a brand new experience for you.
It was.
How did you feel with... Okay, you've already said you like Pinky and Harpo being silent, playing totally in pantomime.
Yes.
They all have their characterizations. Groucho as sort of the motor mouth, rude comic that talks to the camera, which was totally
Groucho,
unheard of back then.
Groucho, I struggled to figure out the mustache.
Okay, the story behind it is that he wore a grease paint mustache for many years and then went to a more realistic fake mustache.
Okay.
This is when they were on stage. One day he arrived late to the show, didn't have time to put on the realistic fake mustache, so just put some grease paint on his lip, and he said, the laughs were the same, why am I wasting my time? So it is a throwback to old theater and vaudeville.
Grow a mustache.
Well, maybe he can't, you know?
Maybe so.
It could be. But, okay, so you weren't thrown by him talking to the camera? That's common anymore.
No, probably because it's common.
Yeah, yeah. How about Chico and his Italian accent, which really doesn't fit in anywhere?
I mean, I didn't even notice it, honestly.
Really? Okay, good. Yeah, it goes back to when ethnic stereotypes played well in vaudeville, and that's where he got that from.
Well, and all the characters here were odd. So to have a different accent, it just fit to me in the movie.
I'm glad. Now, did you even notice... the character of Bob Roland as the fourth Marx brother. That's Zeppo Marx, Groucho's secretary.
I didn't know there were four Marx brothers.
Yeah, this was Zeppo's last movie as one of the brothers because, as he said, he was sick of being called the unfunny one. This movie really underscores the fact that he wasn't funny because he's so minimized in it. The weird thing is, in real life, they say he was the funniest of the brothers. I still can't believe that. But when he retired from making movies, he virtually invented the position of the Hollywood agent and made a lot of money. So any of the new agencies that exist now, that the agent notion didn't really exist until the mid-30s, and he was one of the first to do
it.
So he did okay,
so
as far as that goes.
So he was at least the smartest of the brothers.
Yeah, I do believe he is the smartest of the brothers. Let's take a short break here, and we come back. We'll discuss the problems with the movie and some questions I have for Josh. Despite my cluttered summation of a movie that really didn't need a big plot summary, I think we're doing great. And I want to thank everyone for listening. We'll be right back. This is Hicks Nicks Sticks Picks. All right, we are back on Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks, and this I knew would be an ask of you because this is a really old movie. This is 1933. This is pre-code, so they could even get away with some naughty gags that existed in the early 30s before Hollywood sort of cracked down. What was your feeling going into it, Josh? Because it's nearly 100 years old, this movie.
Yeah, it really is. It was a movie that I didn't mind that you picked it because I would never watch this movie.
Okay.
And honestly, if I was a listener, I might not have watched it either, but I'd be interested in listening to this conversation to learn more about it. Because everything I know about Duck Soup is from the Mike O'Mara Show or Don and Mike and references.
And even then, those are sparse. We don't go to that often. I do think it is their funniest movie. I don't think it's their best movie, and I'll explain why. But the whole deal of the fact that it is just gags, funny, 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 one after another. There's usually a piano solo by Chico. There's normally a harp solo by Harpo. There's normally a romantic subplot in a Marx Brothers movie. All of that is gone, and all we have is anarchy. And that's why they say it was probably ill-received at the time of release, because we're in the throes of the Depression. And America, this was too much. It was too much anarchy, too much silliness. There's no reality in it. There's some surreality in it, which is odd for the time. And it's come to be regarded as probably their funniest movies. So going, and that being said, the fact that it wasn't a huge hit when it was released that had sort of a renaissance later on, what were the problems you had with the film?
There was no plot. This plot is so thin.
It is paper
it
thin.
It is.
Yes.
There's nothing going. Even the end, they arrest one guy or whatever, take care of one guy, but the war is still going on.
Well,
so
yeah.
They didn't even end the war.
But they said by capturing the ambassador. I don't know. I don't know the rules of war, but he was captured by them and he surrendered. So maybe that's the end of the war, but it is. I'm not going to defend the plot.
No, that's.
Yeah.
No, the plot is so thin. It's just gag, which again, I get as the, and I see it as a foundation for so many other movies.
And I have to ask you though, do you think it was well done with the saturation of gags?
No, I think it was good. Okay, I did like great. That. I like good. The fast pace, mm-hmm. especially that scene you played earlier with Groucho when he first meets the lady. And it's pretty sexist too.
Oh, it's horrible sexist.
Talks down the lady, then suddenly it's okay if someone's having.
Did you see the game last night? Of course you did, because you used Instacart to do your grocery restock. Plus, you got snacks for the game, all without missing a single play. And that's on multitasking. So we're not saying that Instacart is a hack for game day, but it might be the ultimate play this football season. Enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply. For three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Mazda? Once you discover the Mazda CX-90, Mazda? It doesn't take long to get it. With three-row seating and safety features like radar cruise control and rear cross traffic alert to carry you and your peace of mind. It will have you saying,
Mazda.
The Mazda CX-90. It's made to move you.
Every Mazda SUV offers you an elevated driving experience and refined performance. Discover it at Mazda of St. Augustine.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide and free professional installation. Rules and restrictions apply.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it.
Are you playing me off?
That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer for 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
It's not fair. You just have to ask the man which one they want.
Exactly.
And then
yeah.
It's okay. You tricked me.
How?
I did not. I knew it was black and white. I did not know it was a musical. There were multiple music.
There are three musical numbers, I believe, in it. Now, the To War number is in there as a parody of the way they did musicals at that time. That's a very, sadly, at that time, that was a current comment and satire of Hollywood with the big over-the-top musical and what seemed like thousands of extras. The other two, these are the rules of my administration that you were just talking about.
Yes.
That is a musical number, but it's full of jokes. So I don't really count that as a musical number, I guess.
It's a musical.
So there are a couple songs in it. Yeah.
And I'm shocked that the clock strikes 10. You haven't pulled yet for some type of bit, radio bit.
Well, you know, the day is young. Yeah. We shall see. But yeah, it was a sharp satire of things going on then. I didn't mean to trick you with the musicality. My apologies.
It's okay. I just didn't see it coming. And just this close to Yankee Doodle, I still have not moved on from that. But I again, this is one where it was fun because I saw it as a foundation for every comedy that I've seen in my life.
Cool. I appreciate the fact that you show it some value there. I don't know. It's not my favorite Marx Brothers movie, but it is, I think, all told, beginning to end, the funniest movie. If that seems contradictory, but I don't know if it is or not.
I totally see this movie playing better when you look back than at the times.
Okay.
I can totally see going into the theater and seeing this and being like, well, this is stupid. There's no plot. This is going on. Mm-hmm. But then I can see looking back at all the inspiration and looking back and be like, oh, this is their best movie.
When we talk about the fact that there was no subplot, no musicals and stuff like that, no dedicated serious musical numbers, what happened is when this was over, Paramount and the Marx Brothers were very much at odds. And the Marx Brothers were threatening to go and start their own production company. So this picture was done sort of haphazardly to satisfy their five-picture deal. And then they quit Paramount. They were going to form their own company. Now, this is really in the weeds Hollywood-wise, but it's a good story, is that they were courted by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, MGM, which was the biggest and most powerful studio at the time. And their director of production, I believe was his title, his name was Irving Thalberg. He died young, but everything he touched turned to gold. He had like a golden boy reputation in Hollywood. And he loved the Marx Brothers. And he brought them over and he said, the reason that Duck Soup didn't hit is it's all you. There's nothing for the ladies. There's nothing for people that want
That's
romance.
True.
And there's no music. So the next movie they did, A Night at the Opera, beautifully made film. The dialogue is just as funny, but there is a romantic subplot. There is a harp solo. There is a piano thing in there. And true Marx Brothers fans are annoyed by that because it takes away from the anarchy of it. But in fact, it's just making it more saleable.
Yeah, it makes a better film overall.
Exactly, yeah.
Totally get that.
Now, Thalberg was funny because he was such an important guy in Hollywood that he would schedule meetings and then just ignore them. And the Marx Brothers didn't like that. And this is a true story. I've seen it cited several places. They called, Thalberg called the Marx Brothers in for a meeting and they sat him in his office and he didn't show up for like 2 hours. And they were livid, but they needed to take the meetings and get the job. They called down to the commissary and had them send up potatoes. And when Thalberg finally came to the office, the Marx Brothers had stripped down to their underwear, built a fire in his fireplace in the office, and were roasting potatoes just because they wanted to say, you know what, you can't play us like this. We're just going to make ourselves at home. So this movie represents sort of a high point in their comedic career, if not their financial career. But I always like the fact that Irving Thalberg saw the magic of the Marx Brothers and was able to make it more saleable and, you know, let the motion pictures continue like that.
Yeah. Do the other movies, I guess you say they have more structure
and
organization, because this felt like skit after skit after skit, very little even transition of how do we get from here to here?
Yeah.
It was very much, we're in this room, now we're in this room.
Much, much more plot driven.
Right.
Especially the movies that came after this. But also know that they were essentially sketch comics that came out of vaudeville to do it. And one other thing that Thalberg did, I didn't even think to mention this, but I will now, is he wanted the routines. And, you know, there's set pieces, set routines, like, for example, in this one, the mirror routine that can stand on their own. But Thalberg wanted the timing to be so precise. What he would do is he would send the Marx Brothers out to theaters to do those set pieces to get the timing right and know how long to pause for laughs in a movie, because they were judging it from the laughs in a live setting. So in a movie, it's hard to gauge what gags are going to hit and what aren't.
Right.
So they would go actually on the road to test out their material, which is brilliant. I really do think it's smart. And that's one of the reasons why I think the pacing in their routines works so well, even to this day.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you still see, again, I can see references to movies for all these, especially those scenes like the lemonade and the mirror
now,
and the cabinet meeting. Sure.
Just for curiosity, I have to ask, do you know what duck soup means? If it doesn't mean, you know, soup made out of a duck.
I have no idea what duck soup means.
In the 1930s, it was slang for something that was easy to do. Like, that's easy. That's a piece of cake. That's duck soup.
Okay.
That did not last. But it's funny because that would mean something to people that saw the movie then, but it doesn't mean anything now.
No, it means nothing now. It's random.
I do love this quote from Groucho. They asked him about the movie's title. He said, take 2 turkeys, 1 goose, 4 cabbages, and mix them together. And after one taste, you'll duck soup for the rest of your life. Maybe he looked at the floor to read it. I don't know.
No idea.
Now, one thing that you said before we recorded that I took as flattery, but also very funny. You said, I can see, Rob, why you like this movie.
Well, I think I said that on this episode. I can totally see why you like it, why older comics will reference this. I think I've seen Steve Martin talk about this movie.
Yeah.
I think watching these movies, I've gotten way back into Only Murders in the past couple of weeks. And I see Martin Short in these Marx Brothers.
Oh, I agree. And one of the reasons is that he has got the vocal precision to pull off gags like this. But there's also a lot of physical comedy in this.
Yes.
Even under Pinky is all about physical comedy. But even Groucho, his takes and his reactions, they're very physical. In the final war scene when he spends time with a jug on his head is funny. Were you?
Well, whenever Groucho's on screen, he cannot stay still.
Yeah.
He is moving the entire time.
And I think that comes from his stage experience. Early Hollywood directors hated the Marx Brothers because sound was really hard to do then.
Right.
And they'd move around. And that was like impossible for them to handle. The one gag that always gets me, and I'm curious if you found it funny or hackneyed because it's been used before, is when they are in Mrs. Teasdale's cottage, I guess, towards the end, and they're at war, and he calls for help. And they go to a montage of everyone running to their help. There's people rowing boats. There's monkeys. There's elephants. There's people on motorcycles. Did you like that gag?
It was fine. I think I was worn down by then.
I understand. The movie can be wearying.
It
moves really fast. It moves and there's a
really
lot of stuff.
Fast for a small amount of... I enjoyed the motorcycle. I enjoyed the motorcycle taking off. Without the sidecar. And then later the sidecar leaving without the motorcycle. I enjoyed that.
Did you see it coming?
I did not.
That's great.
I did not see it coming.
One time I was thinking about, we had a hypnotist on the show, and I think most of that is all bunk. But, you know, he said, I can make people quit smoking. I can do this. And I thought how cool it would be to have a hypnotist have me forget that I'd ever seen the Marx Brothers movies to watch them again for the first time.
That's a good bit.
You think?
Did you ask him to do that?
No, I didn't. Because I didn't like the guy.
Of picking out a movie that you love and telling a hypnotist, make me never remember this movie. And every time I watch it, think it's the first time ever.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
It'd be great. Yes.
Yeah. So that is something that I would love to do. This movie is one of a handful that I could probably recite to you because I've seen it that many times. I taped it off of like Channel 2 in Baltimore when I was a kid on beta. And I watched it so many times off the beta tape that I can still tell you where the commercial breaks were when I watched the movie on disc. This movie is really important to me. Groucho is really important to me. So I have to ask.
Well, I could mark the commercial breaks. The scene changes in here.
Well,
it's
that's
very
true.
Simple where to go to the commercial.
It is. It's very segmented. Do you feel that this is, well, I know what I would rate it. But I have to ask you, how many firecrackers they had at the end of the movie? How many firecrackers out of 10 do you give this movie?
Oh, I am going to give this a 7.
Okay, that is very strong for you, I think.
And that is all because I see the references and I see the inspiration. I will never watch it again. But I think it's worth giving up 69 minutes to watch this sometime.
It is, you know what, I'm very pleased with that. I, of course, have to give it 10. I'm sorry. Even based on the wicked plot point that's never explained, during the war, Pinky and Chickalini just suddenly switch sides. That's never explained except for the fact that I guess the brothers have to be together. So I have to give it 10 firecrackers. I'm sorry. It's just one of my favorites.
Seven's a lot higher than I expected to give this movie.
This is so much fun for me to watch you watch these movies because I didn't know how you would react. I can accept the fact that you'll never watch it again. It's off your bucket list.
But I'm glad I watched it.
Would you ever watch another Marx Brothers movie?
No, you told me this one's the best.
True. All right. I guess I ruined it for you.
I mean,
I could send you the second best.
It depends how many years into this podcast we are.
That's true.
Can we limit one Marx Brother movie a year?
Minimum. We don't have to do another Marx Brothers movie, but
you can sneak one in there later.
But I really do appreciate the fact that you appreciate what we saw and did not hate the movie for 69 minutes, nor draw parallels between this and Karl Marx, which I think is nice too. One of these days, we're going to get your wife to watch one of these old movies.
Yeah, we will.
Okay. So that's Duck Soup. I hope you watched it. Hope you liked it. And if not, check it out.
This is October now. We made it to October.
It's a spooky season, and I hold our next movie in my hand. As you can see, Hicks, Sticks, Picks, Episode 5, quotation mark, spooky season.
So this is going to give us like four horror movies, I think, over the next 4 weeks.
So let's see what movie we'll be watching, and hopefully you'll be watching too, folks.
I hope it's in color.
We'll
I believe
see.
My text message to you yesterday said no black and whites back to back. You have to space them out.
I understood. And you know I have the whole committee that chooses the stuff.
Right.
Oh, it is in color.
Good.
Paramount Pictures, 1968, Rosemary's Baby.
All right. Another movie that I only know from radio references.
Okay. Now I have to know. Go ahead.
I know that Satan's the father of the baby or something.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. I have to ask you, as a church going, faith driven guy, do you have problems with Satan movies?
I do. They creep me out a lot. So most of the time I avoid them. But that's not the homework here. The homework is to watch it. Rosemary's Baby, I've never been tempted to watch. The Exorcist is the one that I have avoided for 40 years.
My mom prohibited me from watching The Exorcist in her home.
I might watch it this season. We'll see.
It's, you know what? The thing about The Exorcist is it's really a fine movie. I mean, it's a horror movie, but horror movies get by.
Together well.
If they're, you know, they can be schlocky, but if they make you scared, they give you the jump scares.
That's my concern with Rosemary's Baby, is because I believe Satan's real. So,
well, this won't do anything to change that.
Exactly. So I know Rosemary's Baby is always on a list of one of the top horror movies ever. So I'm glad this is forcing me to sit down and watch it, but I will watch it around noon with all the lights on.
And if you want, we can just, you know, keep your cell phone on. And if you can call, I can, you know, I can rescue you. It is a wonderful film with a great backstory. Did I show it to my daughter when she was 12? I did. She loved it. So it is a fine film, and we'll be watching Rosemary's Baby.
I'll bring the whole family in.
I'm not saying to do that. I'm not saying to do
11.
That.
My kids are 11. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Mia Farrow, and of course, at that time, she was dating Frank Sinatra. There's so much going on while we talk about Rosemary's Baby. I think you're going to enjoy it. Josh, thank you. I think this was our best episode yet.
Everyone is.
So, folks, thank you for joining us today on Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. Watch Rosemary's Baby. That is your homework. And we will be back next week with a new episode. Josh, thank you.
You're welcome. Go over and rate and review the podcast as well on
iTunes. Oh, yeah. Do all the
podcast
things.
App, subscribe. Do all that stuff. And
we appreciate
it.
And thank you to the Mike O'Mara Show for being our mothership. We will talk to you next week. So long, everybody.
Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. A podcast about Rob's movies with Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka.
Saks Fifth Avenue makes it easy to shop for your personal style. It's fall, and it's time to invest in new arrivals you'll want to wear again and again, like a relaxed Prada blazer and Gucci loafers that are great for work or a weekend rendezvous. Saks makes shopping feel totally customized to you. They'll even let you know when arrivals from your favorite designers are in or when an item you've been eyeing is back in stock. For a personalized, easy shopping experience, head to Saks Fifth Avenue for the best fall arrivals and style inspiration.
When you need a break, skip the scrolling. Visit MyPrize.us. The games are super exciting and you can actually win. MyPrize.us is the most fun free-to-play social casino around. Everyone deserves to win big. All the slots and table games you love with incredible bonuses. Sign up today for an incredible welcome package.
MyPrize.us is a free-to-play social casino. Users must be 18 or older to play. Void where prohibited by law. Visit MyPrize.us for more details.
When you need a break, make it memorable. Visit MyPrize.us. Real prizes, real winners, real easy.
Time and time again, detection-based cybersecurity solutions have failed to stop ransomware. It's time to rethink your posture. ThreatLocker offers a zero-trust approach to endpoint protection that stops ransomware before it strikes. ThreatLocker delivers a deny-by-default strategy where you choose what to run, then block everything else. The result? No stress about the latest malware, because with ThreatLocker, you block it by default. Take charge of your cybersecurity and gain control over your environment. Visit ThreatLocker.com today and stay one step ahead of cyber threats.